Hello, everybody, and welcome to Speaking of Sustainability, the show where we introduce you to the leaders and change agents making a difference in the sustainability space. I'm your host, Colleen Felicki. After starting my composting business in 2017, I quickly realized that our communities are looking for more ways to be sustainable in their daily lives and to support eco-friendly businesses. I'm so excited to introduce you to some sustainable superheroes as we all look to make our planet a better place for years to come. Hello, welcome to Speaking of Sustainability. My name is Colleen Felicki, and I'm super excited for you to be here today. If you're familiar with my podcast, you know that I start off with a sustainability tidbit, and this one is super exciting to me because I'm in the compost space. But on June 12th, the White House, along with EPA, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and the U.S. Food and Drug Administration released the National Strategy for Reducing Food Loss and Waste and Recycling Organics. Yay! This strategy is part of a series of strategies on building a more circular economy for all. I couldn't be happier, and I wanted to share that with all of you. In fact, our guest today does just that. She works with food waste and creating a more circular economy for businesses and schools. So I'm super excited to introduce you today to Marianne Boyer. She's environmental sustainability consultant at Boyer Suddeth Environmental Consultants. Welcome. Welcome, Marianne.
Hi, Colleen. How are you?
Hi, I'm great. I'm so excited about today. When we first spoke, I realized like I really need to have her on this podcast.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Thanks for being here. Let's dig in. Kind of following up to that that fact about the EPA and the U.S. Department of Agriculture and what this national strategy means for our country is a big step. And I know that you've been working towards that for years. But what was your inspiration for becoming an environmental consultant?
I've always been interested in nature as a kid. And my background is when I graduated from college, I was an English major. They did not have environmental science as any kind of major at the time. And so I majored in English. I moved to Boston, did business, and I hated my job, absolutely hated it. And so I went to a college football game on a weekend, and I met this couple, and she was an English major, and he was in the same line of business that I was doing at the time, and they had gone to graduate school for environmental science. And I was kind of like, you can do that. At that time, this was in the 80s, and so that was just not a possibility for undergrads to major in environmental science. So it was kind of a light bulb that went off in my head, and I ended up going to grad school and took a ton of science classes. I figured I could always learn policy. And so that was kind of my catalyst. And so I ended up working for the EPA in Region 3 in Philadelphia for 8 years. And I loved that work. And I also had kids of my own, and I kind of wanted to actually work with younger people. So I did a pivot after EPA as an environmental scientist there. And then I ended up teaching science for 16 years, mostly middle school science. And I could see the power of getting kids outside in nature. And also even like the most ADHD kid, if you give them a chance to be outside and among nature, that's pretty powerful. So I did that for 16 years, really loved teaching. And then in 2015, my third part was basically I'd like to kind of switch and work broadly, more broadly. And so I joined forces with Ann Suddeth, and we formed Boyer Suddeth Environmental Consultants. And so from there, we work with schools and businesses to help them become more environmentally sustainable. And so our goal that first year was to have one client and three to five the next year. And so Now, 9 years later, we've worked with over 35 schools and businesses, and I've had over 55 interns working with us. So,
wow, that's wonderful. Quite a journey. Quite a journey to where you are today. So tell us a little bit about how, I guess, schools or businesses can get started. Do you have some green tips that you can share?
Yeah, so we will work up, before I share the green tips, I'll just kind of, when we work with a client, we will do a lot of listening to see where the passion is and to kind of help with a project management. So whether it's like getting a green team started, or maybe this school or business already has a green team, but they need to energize that, or maybe they want a sustainability plan written or an environmental assessment, or maybe they want to reduce the food waste in their cafeteria or improve their outdoor learning space and convert that into, pollinator gardens and, beds and et cetera. So depending, like every project is different. So, but if you are starting, we've also found that the power of third party certifications are really catalysts for change. And instead of one or two people saying like, oh, I want my school or my business to become more environmentally sustainable, if you go towards getting an award for our certification, that's really much more powerful than it's the group working for that. So schools have, there's like through National Wildlife Federation, if you ever got Ranger Rick magazine as a kid, through National Wildlife Federation, they have a great program called Eco Schools USA. They also have an Eco School International program, and that they have a roadmap of how schools can really become more environmentally sustainable, and then you can get some awards. So we've worked with schools to help them become eco schools. There's also the Department of Education has a Green Ribbon program that's very robust. We've worked with schools to kind of help them get that award. And then also there's the Green Restaurant Association. That's a nonprofit in Boston. And we've worked with some schools and businesses to help them get that certification for how they're in the dining hall or cafeteria. And then we've also, there's for businesses, there's certifications out there as well to kind of make more green purchasing and energy choices. So I just feel like certification is really a great way, like, because all of a sudden it becomes no longer about the individual, but hey, look, we've gotten this award, and it's really great to, good news, and you can publicize that as well.
Sure. That's, I feel like it drives people for that goal.
Yeah.
Goal. And it's exciting when you meet a goal and share that award. So, wow, I didn't realize that there were so many programs for businesses and schools. That was a great list of awards or organizations that you shared. So thank you. Thanks for doing that. I'm glad that you mentioned it. I'm sitting here taking notes, for future, but good to know. So Marianne is the go-to for how your organization can, work towards a goal, work towards an award for a green recognition. I'm assuming there's, steps or checklists that you guide your clients through the checklist to, to on the road to receive that award.
Yeah. And, each client is unique, and we do a lot of really listening. Mm-hmm. We don't want to come in and act like we have the answers. That's really not the way to work with somebody. It's really kind of helping to, as I mentioned, guide where the passion is. So if it's a green team that wants to get started, whether it's a school or a community group or an office, environment, we will say start small. Mm-hmm. Go where the passion is. So if somebody in the team is really excited about reducing waste or energy, then go with that. And I also, we recommend when a school or organization is starting a green team to kind of like cast a wide net to see who's interested in and hold short meetings that are really, you know, people have limited time. And so just to make sure there's an agenda, I always recommend that there's food being offered.
The great motivator.
Yeah. It's good if in person is best, at, you know, first so that a group can gel. And then, of course, you know, we're so used to now with Zoom and hybrid as well. But the in-person meetings are really good. And then I think it's also when we've worked with sustainability coordinators at schools or people who are just starting out there as leaders and we're coaching them, really give a lot of praise. I've had, you know, some people say like, well, I've been doing 80% of the work and, you know, and, but I've said, that's okay. Give praise to the folks that are doing the work and that will, because people are volunteering their time. Sure. So I would just say, and also it's really, so important to, like, you know, share the appreciation and celebrate your success. Really important for that. But back to just this starting small, that's so important because if you have those achievable, winnable goals, then that can mushroom into something else.
I agree with you. I say that all the time with our compost clients. Just start small. You know, and then see that it's achievable and then work your way from there. So that's fantastic. Could you share the green tips?
Oh, sure. Yes, I can do that. So just as I said, go where the passion is, start small, celebrate success, recognize those that are making changes. And also the other thing that works is like, it depends who's the messenger. You know, if you can kind of keep that fun or positive, nobody likes finger wagging. So I've mentioned that because if we've worked with a school, for example, that wanted to reduce their food waste and also make sure that they wanted to implement composting and better recycling. And nobody likes that. Like, you know, you're doing this wrong. It's more of like, you know, hey, if you can add humor, if you can kind of, you know, sometimes younger students giving the message to older students can be powerful as well.
Oh, yeah. So, that's a great, fantastic tips. Thanks. Thanks for sharing them.
You're welcome.
I know that we just talked about those tips, but you had mentioned three individual actions, I guess, for individuals, right? That that would have big impacts on our planet. Could you share those with us?
Yeah. So I've thought about this, and during COVID, we did a lot of, you know, when everybody was kind of hunkered down, I did a lot of thinking about, well, what could individuals do? Because there's always that pull with like, oh, can individuals really make a difference? Because we need to have broad systematic changes as we have a warming planet. But I really do feel like individuals can make a difference. And so the three areas that I personally think that can be impactful are one is to address food waste. And food waste, as you know, Colleen, with your business, like, you know, it's Americans, the average American generates between 30-40% of food waste. And that's almost, I like to tell people, like, it's like you come home from the grocery store, you have three bags, right, full of groceries, and you might as well just throw away one bag, not even open it. And so,
excellent description. Yeah.
So, and that costs that's a lot of money wasted. I do have, you know, I can pull up the numbers of what that is for, you know, but when you just think about that, it impacts our pocketbook. And it's just so wasteful. So why that is, with a lot of food just going into, if they're not using back to earth compost, or even in Philadelphia, Bennett compost, or composting in your backyard, a lot of times our garbage, if it's not incinerated, it goes to landfills. And so, as you know, but I think a lot of people don't know, food in landfills, because turns into a pretty powerful greenhouse gas emission. So the food in landfills, as it's anaerobic or no oxygen conditions, the bacteria converts that wasted food into methane, which is a way more powerful, gives a way more powerful punch, between 20 to 80% more powerful than CO2. So that's an issue. And when you kind of think that we are wasting the opportunity for kind of keeping a circular economy where we would have food waste that would be composted, that could return the nutrients to the soil, we all of a sudden now have new food that's going into waste, into a landfill, and mixing with, you know, other nasty stuff. So that's why I feel like food waste is something that we really need to address. And there are ways that we can, why do we waste so much food? Just briefly, it's because maybe it's portion size. It's also, we haven't cleaned out the fridge enough. We haven't looked at, we haven't embraced those leftovers. We might not have had time to meal plan. It might also be confusion about shelf life. Or ugly fruits and vegetables. So I like to say embrace those ugly fruits and vegetables. So food waste is one, and solution, composting, and also trying to reduce food waste. Number two, I feel like if we look at having more of a plant forward diet, I'm not saying everybody should become vegetarians and vegans. I mean, that's great if people are, but I still eat meat. But I'm thinking that a plant forward diet means you have plants at the center of your dish, and the meats on the side. So why is that important? I have a carbon emissions of food slide that we can pop up. And this carbon emissions of food, if you look at this, and for those people who can't see this, it's, I'm showing a slide where it has on the x-axis, the horizontal, it shows beef, cheese, pork, different types of food. And then on the y-axis, it shows the pounds of CO2 equivalency to create a pound of edible weight. So in other words,
wow,
we're looking at the carbon emissions of food. Beef is, and this bar chart is way up there in terms of spiking with the carbon emissions. So to produce a pound of beef, there's a lot of carbon emissions. You can think of like the land that's being used to raise the beef, and the water to grow the food that's supporting the, you know, the, to produce the beef, and the fertilizers, and then also just the the fact of like turning that animal into food that's going to be, and a beef that's going to be at a grocery store, and the food miles traveled, and then the refrigeration. So has a very high greenhouse gas emissions. Cheese has a higher one. So beef is up about 27 pounds of CO2 equivalency per pound of meat. And then there's cheese and pork. But as you move down the scale to the right, you can see the greenhouse gas emissions really drop, and pork has a much less impact. So if you do want that meat, it's better to choose perhaps pork or chicken and fish. Mm-hmm. And then way down there with very, you know, rice has a smaller carbon emissions. Legumes, grains, vegetables, and fruit. So it's just something that I think is really important to think about, having, you know, maybe have less meat and
absolutely
more plant forward. So
what a great graphic. I've never seen that like that before. I know it, but I've never seen it in that type of format. And it really just brings the attention to how many carbon emissions, like with beef and meat. And like you said, you don't have to change your diet drastically. There's small changes with, you know, adding in the vegetables, more vegetables.
Exactly.
Or as the center of your meal.
And just to, sometimes people think, I mean, we've worked with schools where some of the students say, let's have meatless Mondays, or they'll say, or another expression is sometimes trying to be vegan before 6 p.m. So in other words, try not to, you know, have, you know, try to be more plant-based for breakfast and lunch. So those impacts, I think, help. And then the third is, I was thinking about the third, and there was a lot, but I think that where we Americans, and I, myself included, you know, if you're in a house or an apartment, There we have our love of grass. I have grass, but my third tip is if one can shrink the grass and shrink their lawn and have more native plants. I think that that's really an important thing because lawn is, yes, it's great for people to run around and play and everything. It looks nice. And so, but if you shrink it and you have more native plants, grass is really a monoculture. So you really don't have the biodiversity that you do with native plants. And so putting in native plants along even like a sidewalk or the plants that will be perennials that will come back and that require less water than maybe annuals, and you're really attracting the beneficial insects and birds. That's really something that I feel like it's attractive when you have when you can get your native plants, and it's just, I feel like if we could shrink our lawns, and I've had an intern write a blog article about like the amount of water and the amount of the cost that Americans spend on their lawn.
Watering their lawn?
Yeah. And also trying to keep it like perfect. I mean, embrace those clovers and dandelions. It doesn't have to be perfectly green. So anyway.
Yeah, that's, I didn't even think about that. When we were thinking about the tips that individuals could take, I was thinking on a food, kind of on a food level, but adding native plants to your property is huge. We always, the bees love our lawn in the spring because we have a lot of dandelions, but
that's great.
But every year just trying to add more natives is something that has been one of our goals for where we live. So, and I love that, you can have them anywhere. I mean, you don't have to have a property, right? You can, right. If you have a balcony or, in pots, kind of, near your door.
Yep. My son is in a row house, and he has a property in South Philly, and it's a tiny little patch in the backyard, and he put some milkweed plants there, and he was also excited to see some of the pollinators. So again, this is not a big area, but he was really excited to kind of
fantastic.
You know, you plant it and they will come. So,
yes.
So, and Doug Ptolemy, who's a professor who's done a lot of research at this at University of Delaware, he has written a number of books. He has one, Bringing Nature Home. He's just really has a lot of, he's a good resource for what people fantastic. Can do in the backyard.
Doug Ptolemy?
Yes, Ptolemay.
Okay. Great. Thanks for sharing that.
Sure.
Can you share where folks can find you online?
Yes. So it's Boyer, B-O-Y-E-R, Suddeth, SUDDUTH.com. And we have a series of blog articles that, again, a lot of our interns have written over the years, whether it's like tips to reduce your printer waste or shrink your garden or green your coffee station or composting or celebrating some of the, you know, our clients that have done some great things. So that's where.
So head over to BoyerSuddeth.com and check out the blog posts.
Thank you.
Awesome. All right. Well, this has been fantastic. I hate to go, but we have a few more minutes here, and I just want to ask you the breakdown. So what is something you feel many people aren't aware of when it comes to sustainability?
I guess I would just emphasize that individual matters count. And I think that the reason why I say that is because, like, just if you have, I'm just thinking of your business, composting. Somebody sees your back to earth compost bucket outside and that person's doing it. Well, next thing you know, the neighbor sees that and wants to do that. And then that perhaps the whole neighborhood or community. And then so I feel like individuals sometimes, like, I think that we can't get, we can get sometimes discouraged with, climate change impacts and, oh my gosh, the earth is warming. But I really feel like if we're part of a solution and doing some things that are trying to lessen our carbon footprint, we feel better. And it also can kind of help be an example for other people.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for sharing your knowledge with us today.
Thank you, Colleen.
Really appreciate you being here. And we're going to wrap it up. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to another awesome episode of Speaking of Sustainability. Please follow and support our guests as we encourage you to continue doing your part to make a difference in our global community. And don't forget to rate, like, and share. See you next time.